and the Rebels will win it 78-73 in a game, Curtis, where I'm going to say the Rebels outcoached and outworked the Lobos in the pit.
You're listening to Cofield and Company
on ESPN Las Vegas.
Rebel recap coming up in 15. Joe Esposito is here, longtime college basketball coach, helping us out on a Monday, President's Day. Vegas Golden Knights playing an afternoon tilt at the Fortress. It's 2-0 early in the second as the Capitals are in town. Golden Knights with the lead. Last couple of things on the All-Star game and All-Star weekend. This was a double winning weekend for UNLV. They win a basketball game with their current players. One of their former players, Derek Jones, goes out there and wins the dunk contest. Before we get to the griping, I got to address one thing. And I blew it last week because I was looking at the odds. This is really easy to say now. I was looking at the odds, and I'm like, he's going to win. I cannot believe he's a second choice. The other thing was, Joe, I saw a lot of complaining about the four-man field going into the dunk contest, and I didn't get it. Like, we've got Aaron Gordon, who's one of the all-time great dunkers, especially in that contest. He's incredible, by the way, at 6'8 or 6'9, and he's not a beanpole. I mean, he's a big guy. But his ability to freaking throw the ball basically from any angle, both hands, through his legs, is just insane. And Derek Jones is one of the best dunkers basketball's ever seen. He reminds me of, super athletic, like George Gervin with his build. He is ridiculous. So I knew it was going to be a good contest.
No doubt. And it was. It was a great contest. And there's just so much controversy about the whole thing because, you know, Aaron Gordon has five straight 50 scores. You know, he goes through the whole thing perfect. And then, you know, Derek Jones takes off a little bit outside the free throw line.
Inside the free throw line.
And he goes and jumps and he does a windmill. You know, Michael Jordan's dunk was the famous dunk,
right,
where he just hang it and he's.
But he did like he backed up the ball a little bit.
Look at the logos. All those logos on his shoes.
Oh, yeah.
You see those logos.
But his arm movement, he backed up the ball a little bit.
Just gave it a little bit.
Derek Jones does like
he could
Dominique.
Also, he could pop. Yeah, he's doing Dominique from the free throw line. And he gets a 48. So then he gets a 48. So now they got to one-up him. So here comes
I want to break in for a second. I often think, even though there's some basketball players judging, and there were several, I often think these guys are so athletic, they make really hard dunks look easy.
They do.
And they're almost underestimated with what they're doing. By the way, do you remember the beginning of the dunk contest? Like early, well, the first one that we know of was, ABA.
Yeah,
with David Thompson,
Dr. J,
yeah. Yep. But when the NBA started doing it, I remember guys going, I swear to God, like, I'll never forget. I think it was Terry Tyler. Like, I think he just, like, dribbled up to the rim and went up with one hand and dunked it. That was it. Like, there was no trick to it.
Kind of like what Dwight Howard did this time. Dwight Howard. I mean, he's still doing those dunks. The judging's a whole other thing, but when they brought Taco Fall, and he's 7'6", and he jumped over him. Yeah, his shoulders, you know.
I'd like to see him clear his head. I'm sorry.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
He dragged his crotch on his head, Joe. I don't appreciate it. Come on.
They call that something, don't they? Like a teabag? I don't know. They call it something.
It's not something good.
It's not something good. That's one thing you don't want happy
to teabag
when you're in college.
He teabagged the back of his dome.
I don't know.
That's 3 points off. Sorry.
That's not a good thing.
You get a 47.
One of the judges, the rapper guy, Common, come out and said they were gonna make it even. So there was more dunks. So they were going to hold up two nines. And
well, they said this.
After the fact.
They said it after the fact. They were colluding to try to get it to another dunk, and either, I don't know, one of the judges stepped out of line and was basically like, I think I'm done, or misunderstood it and misscored it.
Something didn't work.
They didn't add up correctly, so he lost by a point. And then, I just heard you say 5 minutes ago it was a great All-Star game because guys cared. Does Aaron Gordon care too much? Is that a good thing? Like, I'm reading his quotes, and I'm like, he's saying he's not going to do it anymore. Like, relax.
Well, he got robbed in 2016. You know, Zach LaVine shouldn't have beat him in 2016. So that's where I think he was upset about. But I know Dwayne Wade held up that nine. First of all, the people judging are Dwayne Wade, the rapper Common. I don't know what he knows about dunks. Candace Parker, who is around basketball. Obviously, Scottie Pippen. He's from Chicago, and they would love to see him there. And then Chadwick. Those were the judges in the deal. And to me, I think the judging system has to change. I would do like one of those shows on TV, like The Voice. I would have all the fans on there you know, on their phones, and all the people in the stadium. And I would have it so the fans are involved. It's all about the fans, the All-Star game. It's all about that excitement.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, just
why
have
can't
the
that
fans.
Be the, why can't that be the fifth judge?
That would be the perfect
have
judge.
Have four judges and then the fans in the arena, the fans at home.
And they're so into it.
And for the NBA, you'll get a – you know, I don't know if they have a phone partner already, whoever it is, but they could sell it. They're going to make a boatload of money there. Or give it to charity. The fans and fans there and watching all the little charges that you get on your phone, that goes to charity.
No doubt. And I think that would be the best part and the best thing to do. You know, I was surprised Michael Jordan wasn't out there being one of the judges, to be honest with you. That was kind of interesting, you know, being in Chicago and all. But, you know, so then when Derrick Jones holds up the trophy, you kind of feel bad for him because it wasn't that they were booing, but the crowd wasn't that excited. They didn't seem excited. They seemed way more excited when Buddy Hield hit that three-point shot at the buzzer to win the three-point shooting contest than they did when Derrick Jones won. It's too bad for him because he is a fantastic jumper. He's got incredible athleticism. And I just hope that the league can get those two back and add Ja and add Zion. And that's my four field next year. And let the fans vote, and it would be fantastic. But we'll see where it goes and what happens. But it was a great contest, nevertheless.
Well, the cool thing, as I said 5 minutes ago, the NBA actually cares about its fans, unlike Major League Baseball. They listen to them. They try to make changes. The Elam method, whatever it's called, was revolutionary. They took a risk there. And I'm sure they're going to get more fan reaction on how that worked out. And I'm guessing that they're actually going to listen to guys like you who say, you know, don't end it on a free throw. So that'll be something positive. I saw someone else suggest... God, I hate this because I know Adam Hill's a psycho on the block charge thing, but I'm right there with him. What if you rewarded charges being taken with like 2 points?
I mean, most coaches do that on their bench. You know, I think, you know, when you're, yeah, when, okay. You know, there's a guy stat net.
Right, but in the official
on
score.
On the official score, I mean.
I just don't want refs out there with that stupid punching motion.
Yeah, I mean.
David Hall with the, you know, trying to put on a show. Points on the board.
It was just so awesome to see that somebody trying to take a charge at an All-Star game. And you know, what do you think their coaches are saying and their GMs and all their people? They're probably cringing, like, "Oh my God, he tried to take a charge." You know, I think that's what was the most interesting thing about it. Yeah. So, but anyway, it was great, and it was awesome to see that Kobe Bryant MVP trophy. I thought that was really neat. I think that was a nice tribute to him. And the whole evening, the number 2 for LeBron's team, the number 24, everything about it was great, and they really. You know, did a super job, and my hat's off to him. The only thing I would do is I would keep it in a warm climate. I would bring it to Vegas every year or Phoenix every year.
Good luck.
Keep it somewhere warm.
It's in a cold weather city, I think, next 3 years, right?
It is.
At least.
It's going to cold. Yeah, and I think it would be great for them to do it there.
Kawhi Leonard wins the MVP. Kawhi, yep. San Diego State guy. They're very proud of that. I saw, you know, San Diego State fans over the weekend mocking on UNLV fans for being happy about Derrick Jones, like, you know, you have the dunk champion. We have a MVP and a world champion. All right.
Come on, man.
But they're sky high right now. They're sky high. They won again this weekend. That was easy.
That was easy. And I told Ed Graney, by the way.
Boise. Yeah, because, Graney worries on a different level than we do.
I mean,
when it comes to San Diego State.
Is he related? Is he related to Dutcher?
I don't know. You know, I pointed out, and Ed hates this, by the way, when we say that, you know, Aztec guy. I pointed out that during the discussion with you last week, he's like, Dutch, Yanni, Malachi. I'm like, we're doing first names now?
He's buddies.
I gotta do that with freaking UNLV.
He's buddies with him.
In this market.
That's his team. And he was worried about Boise. And I'm thinking, I'm saying, are you kidding me? Boise's got no shot in that game.
Why didn't you think they had a shot?
I just think San Diego State has just got so much to play for. It's like, they already won and clinched.
Well, why did UNLV play him close then?
Why did they play?
Better matchup?
Yeah, better matchup.
Well, so what I'm asking you is, why didn't you think Boise was a good matchup?
I just thought to myself that they're playing for so much more, and I just don't see Boise. I watched Boise a couple times this year, and I don't think that they can match up with those guys, and I didn't see it.
I think Boise's problem, and I've said this a bunch of times now, they don't have a point guard.
No, they don't.
And because he's got a bunch of wing guys – he can't get the Oregon transfer, Kijab, and Hobbs on the floor at the same time. Like, I thought Hobbs killed you guys. I thought he was I think he's their glue guy, but he's not really a point guard either.
Right.
So they can't get all these wings on the floor, and you got to have a point guard. But against San Diego State, you got no shot without someone who can get downhill, is going to make good decisions.
Yeah.
And can shoot the three. They don't have guys who can shoot, who can keep you honest. You know, they have 4-on-5, basically. Their point guards can't keep you honest from three.
No, and they're a tough matchup. I mean, San Diego State's a tough matchup. And just remember, nobody saw it coming. You know, nobody saw this coming. And if you remember, in the beginning of the season, they did not receive a single vote in the AP or coaches poll.
I thought San Diego State had a great chance of going unbeaten. I said it from the beginning.
Yeah, I can tell you said it from the beginning. As I watch these peaches go by me, I can say you said so from the beginning.
God, I'm going to owe you such a big meal. I really should wrap it up because
I can smell these peaches.
I had a ridiculous pick of over. I'm still alive, though. I'm still alive. Over, under 2.5 losses.
You're still alive. They got to lose the next three.
Yep.
I got
a shot. UNLV can go down there and pull the upset. Colorado State can shoot the hell out of the three ball, and then up at Reno is going to be a Hornets nest.
It could happen, and I could be the one buying your
pizza. It's not going to happen.
But, you know, they're playing great, and they're 26-0. I mean, and then Utah State was picked as unanimous, you know, team to win the league, and they sweep them by 9 points, 12 points. And I've been saying it, and I said it before, and I said it on the air before, that the guys they have, they're doing so well, like Flynn. You know, he's a guy that had no success in the Pac-12. They were 10-26 when he was there. He was a guy from Washington State. You know, you look at Wetzel. He was a guy that was Vanderbilt. They had 20 straight losing games in a row, and they didn't win an SEC game. This year was the first SEC game they won in a long time. Fagan was at Santa Clara. He had one scholarship offer out of college. I mean, Wetzel was a tennis player. Wetzel played tennis in New Zealand and at 17 years old decided, hey, maybe I should play basketball. And then the same thing with Flynn. You know, Flynn was 5'2 as a freshman. 5'2. That's about as tall as you. I mean, are you kidding me? So I'm so behind. I'm so
look
behind.
Look at Joe the Giant being a heightist.
Am I short? I didn't think I was that
short. You're not tall.
I'm a basketball coach. I'm tall. I just think San Diego State, I'm a fan. I love what they're doing. They beat Creighton by 31 points, folks. They beat Iowa by 10. They're beating good teams. They're beating good teams. Get on a bandwagon because I think they got a shot.
Well, not in this town, which is a discussion for another day. I was arguing last week with Adam Hills, who says locals here should be rooting for San Diego State. That is a bunch of bunk. I got to watch a game up close. I know you watched it down in Albuquerque. Boy, that is an amazing portrait of a team that is playing together versus a team that right now is really disjointed, and the Rebels come out with a season sweep against New Mexico.
Awesome, 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 awesome. And I was so happy for him. I thought it was great.
We'll build on that on the way back. Very cool story right now with the Rebels as they're still challenging for one of those higher seeds in the conference.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas.
That's an ode to Newark, New Jersey. Homeless people, hookers, and crack bums. This is the take on the JC song.
I was just wondering what that was because I liked their New York song.
Newark. Yeah, it's a mess. It's a mess.
Your team's still doing well, though. Your team's still doing well.
They can win at home.
They can win at home. That's a good thing.
They will set. They'll set a crazy mark, or at least break a trend. They have only one road win, and if people haven't followed that program, they're 9-6 in the Big Ten. So they're actually right there in the top five in the Big Ten. But they're unbeaten at home, and they only have one road win the entire season.
Wow.
Listen to this. No team has gotten into the NCAA tournament with fewer than three wins away from home since 1994.
Are they going to be the team that beat that?
Well, if they go 10-10 in the Big Ten and have 20 wins, are they going to be kept out?
No, I think if you have a 500 record in that league, I think you're in.
Which, by the way,
I'm right. I'm right on with you.
No, this is how objective I am. I don't want to see them miss the tournament, but if that were the reasoning and they denied a 500 team, I wouldn't be happy, but I could deal with it. And I actually think that has to be a trend moving forward. I'm so tired of seeing this, hey, you go 500 in a Power 5 or Power 6 conference, you're automatically in. That's not right. Especially now when college basketball is as balanced as it is. That's not right. Last couple things on San Diego State, Joe.
Yep.
And then we're going to get to what happened with UNLV and New Mexico.
Sure.
UNLV, a second straight season sweep.
Hey.
Of the Lobos. You guys did it last year with a gritty win down there, and UNLV got the job done over the weekend. Here's what we're looking at for San Diego State to go unbeaten for the season. They've got the Rebels down there next Saturday, Colorado State down there, and then at Reno. I still think the at Reno spot is dangerous.
I do too.
The Wolfpack fans don't attend the games like they did when Musselman was there. It's still good. You know, they're still getting like 8,500, 9,000, not 11,200, I think is what that place holds. I would assume that Reno fans would be gaga to go watch Steve Alford potentially knock off and, you know, San Diego State and end the unbeaten season. I think it'll be packed. So it'll be frenzied. And I cannot wait to see what San Diego State does defensively against Jalen Harris.
And it's senior night.
That too.
And that.
I appreciate defense.
Yeah, no doubt. And senior night?
Yeah.
I mean, for some reason, teams just play better on senior night. Nobody wants to go anywhere on senior night. You don't want to be there. I don't know if their teammates just want to see them leave with a bang. I don't know what it is, but I've been involved in 33 senior nights, and I can't think of one we've lost. And I think it's pretty cool to see that, you know, the teams are supporting and they want to see their guys leave on a good note. But San Diego State is going to be great to see that game. Hopefully they'll be playing, you know, with an unblemished. I hate to say, I don't want UNLV to lose. I would like to see UNLV beat them. But if they're going in there undefeated, man, that'd be a heck of a game, heck of an atmosphere. And, I mean, there needs to be an incredible crowd. I'm sure there will be.
ESPN's BPI says San Diego State at 26-0 has a 68% chance now to finish the regular season undefeated, 44% chance to reach Selection Sunday undefeated, so that means win the Mountain West Conference tournament. Only a 2.2% chance to win the NCAA tournament and complete a perfect season.
You'd think it would be higher than 2.2, but you know, got to think about completing a perfect season, man. That's not easy to do.
Patino tweeted over the weekend about San Diego State. He said, "I saw San Diego State play for the first time. Great defensive team, and Malachi Flynn might be the best guard I've seen all year."
He might be right. I saw that.
That's not too much?
I don't think it's too much. I think there's a lot of great players out there, but Malachi's really doing a lot, and he's a leader, and he's got swag about him. And we've talked enough about San Diego State, but
one more.
Okay,
is it still cool to say there's no dominant team in college basketball?
Oh, you don't want to get me started because there are dominant teams in college.
Right, let me give you this though before you go. I know you're going to go nuts on Baylor.
I got more than Baylor.
San Diego State, Gonzaga, Baylor, Kansas right now are on a combined 76-game win streak.
Yeah, so is that not dominant? Like, I mean, hello? I mean, what's not dominant about it? You got Baylor, who's undefeated in the Big 12. I mean, you know I'm going to tell you about Baylor. They're 6-0 versus top 25. They've been 5 weeks number one. Are they not dominant? What's the definition of dominant? Where's Adam when we need him? Dominant. Obviously,
well, you know,
they're dominant.
But you know what happens, Joe. If they're unfamiliar names, obviously, aside from Kansas.
That's exactly right.
People still diss Gonzaga. If they're not the true blue bloods of college basketball, it's like, oh, it can't be. These teams can't be dominant.
How's Gonzaga not dominant? They're undefeated in their conference. They're 26-1.
Yeah.
That's dominant to me. San Diego State's dominant. Kansas. You know, Kansas is great team. They're 11-1. They're in a conference with Baylor, who's 12-0. I mean, I would consider them dominant. Just think of their losses, Kansas losses. They lose to Duke, they lose to Villanova, and they lose to Baylor. I mean, they've got tough losses. They're a dominant team. I think Duke's dominant. Hey, well, he lost to Stephen F. Austin. Well, you know, sometimes that happens. They're 12-2 in the ACC. I think they're dominant. And I see some other teams starting to move up, and one of them is Maryland. I think Maryland is starting to play better, and they're 21-4, and I got a feeling that they're going to be a team that is going to make some noise in this NCAA tournament. So I disagree. I think there are dominant teams. I hate when people say there's no – everything's parity. It's not. There's teams sitting there a long time. Maybe because there's been so many number one teams in the country, they've had seven different number one teams, maybe the people that are voting don't know what they're voting for. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe you don't know who you're picking. You picked Michigan State out of the chute, they lose their first game. Maybe you should do more research on who is actually good, and maybe they won't have that problem next year and the year after.
I was certain down the stretch that New Mexico would do what it needed to do to get that win. The Lobos did not. What did you see down the stretch in a tight game where UNLV came up with key baskets and a big defensive play while on the other side? What did you see from New Mexico?
I just saw selfish basketball. There were some times where the ball never got reversed. Guys are shooting threes in the corner. And one time they got bailed out. I mean, they got, Elijah got a foul on there and three shots.
Yeah, early on.
Yeah, I mean, they look like a team that was defeated. They look like a team that really wanted to win. I didn't really feel that with them. They don't play any defense.
They looked, you know what? They got blown out here because I think they bailed on the last 5 minutes. They lost 99-78 here. And I'm watching. I've seen a lot of basketball. And I don't want to overreact to, like, one guy having bad body language. But here at the Thomas and Mack, I'm like, holy crap. These guys, man, when things go wrong, they just start all walking to their own corners. Guys are chatting with other dudes on the bench. Another guy's just laying on the floor after being knocked down. and it wasn't that bad down at the pit, but it was a lot of the same stuff. Just the lack of team basketball. The defense is beyond belief. And the other thing that drives me freaking nuts, and I'm going to sound really old here, I understand that 6'8", 6'9", 6'10 guys want to be multifaceted. They want to be part of positionless basketball. They want to be able to play two guard and small forward. But my God, Paul Weir, UNLV has no size. They're throwing Jonah Antonio at the four. They threw Jay Green at the power forward. You have 2 6'9" dudes in Manigault, who came over from Pittsburgh, and Vance Jackson, who came over from UConn, and he can't get them to play inside, ever. There's no way UNLV would have stopped those guys back to the basket. They certainly would have fouled them a bunch. They're never inside.
I totally agree with you.
You can't have you five guards. You have 2 6'9" guys. They both want to play facing the basket, 15 feet away.
And that's what they probably sold them in the recruiting. And that's what they probably sold them.
Like, things change.
Things do change. I would went old school camp offense. Throw it inside.
I cut you off. You got a guy in Jonah Antonio who's more comfortable 26 feet from the basket. Hey, Jonah, you want to play? You got to play power forward on defense.
Yeah.
Does he do it? Yes.
Yeah, you have to. You do what's best for the win. And that's the selfishness in that team, and that's what you see defensively. You know, defense is a team thing. You know, if one guy gets beat, someone's there to help him. You don't see that. You saw Amari Hari going all the way to the basket, making acrobatic shots, falling into the stands, almost fell into Snake's lap. I mean, are you kidding me? I think it's over and over. You see the difference in the teams. And, hey, my hat's off to UNLV. They played well. The thing that they're not doing, though, and they need to start doing if they're going to get any type of run here late, is make their free throws. I mean, they were 50%. Yep. So if TJ's listening, I'm going to throw this old school deal at you. No, take the dribble out of the free throw shot. I think guys are thinking about it too much. They're dribbling the ball. Remember, guys, spin the ball. Just take the ball, get in your shooting pocket, and shoot the free throw. Take the dribble out. I'm going to guarantee their percentage increases by 20%. From 50% to 70, take out that dribble.
Yeah, like Rick Barry over here.
That's a little coaching.
Keep that point, because I want to build on that on the way back. Also talk about Elijah Mitre-Long, who was massive, especially on the defensive end.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews. You're listening to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Excellent basketball weekend. NBA All-Star Game, a big hit, which is on social media especially, which is a surprise because no one can agree on social media. There's always some bitter folks out there, especially on the NBA, but nailed it on most fronts. Good basketball weekend here in town with, speaking of the All-Star weekend, Derek Jones, former UNLV player, winning the dunk contest, and the Rebels sweep New Mexico. I can tell you from being down there at the pit, even though attendance is down a little bit, it's still a really rough place to play. It's loud. There were probably 12,000, 11,000.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
For a team that's not very good. You know, that's really good. For a team that's
The funny thing is, we say that, they were 14-1 at home coming in.
And I can see that. I mean, because I told you in the beginning of the year, I thought they were going to be really good. I thought they were a team that could contend for the championship because they had the talent. But then, you know, that's a whole part of this is coaching. I mean, I want to throw this at you, which I thought was really, really cool, what I saw in the UNLV game. In the last timeout of the game, when New Mexico had the ball to go the length of the floor and there was a timeout called, and I noticed that Tim Buckley was in the middle of the huddle. He was sitting in the seat, and TJ was standing behind him. Excuse me.
That happens more often than you'd think, because sometimes Kruger's in the middle there too. And TJ will come in late, but he's got a lot of trust in his coaching staff.
That's exactly what I was going to say. He has so much trust in his guys, and I guarantee you that was Buckley's scout. And he probably knew exactly what was going to happen in that play or what their tendencies were, because when you're an assistant coach and you're doing your scouting, you're watching every film, you're trying to get every advantage you can, and your head coach has got so many other things going on, you're going to give him the key points. You know, you don't know exactly what's going to happen in the game, but to see him stand there and trust his assistants and to let them take over the team for that little section of time really gave me a feeling of, man, he's a good guy, and he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
I'm choking to death.
You're getting all worked up.
But I thought it was great.
What do you think of, the shot they took eventually. What do you think about the play before that where Elijah Mitra along. He takes a risk. That's a risky play at midcourt, but he freaking picked him clean.
He did.
That's embarrassing.
He did pick him clean, and if he would have gotten a foul call there, that was a risky one.
It was.
And the one earlier, do you remember when it was UNLV was ahead, it was time and score, and he ran all the way up the floor, and he ran into the back of one of his players?
Yeah.
And why didn't he just pull it out, you're wondering? I mean, he does have a little bit of a streak in him, like, one of those guys.
Like, no, yeah.
It's one of those kind of guys, but it was impressive. And then to see UNLV go to a four-guard offense and even a five-guard offense, I think that was pretty good. And this is the thing about mismatches. And everybody talks about, you got to worry about mismatches. You got to worry. I'm going to tell you the best quote I ever heard as I was growing through coaching. Mismatches don't beat you. Uncontested shots do. And if you notice in a game, uncontested shots are what's going to beat you. And Marvin Coleman was 4-for-4 from three. Go back and look at the tape. There were uncontested shots. There was good ball movement. And that goes back to that statement I made about defense. New Mexico does not play team defense. Defense is a team sport. When one guy breaks down, someone's got to be there to help them, and they could care less. You want to be selfish on offense, you could be selfish on defense, and that's what you saw during that game.
Marvin Coleman, perfect on the day. Like you
four
said,
for four.
4-for-4, 6-of-6 from the floor. He is now up to, on catch-and-shoot jumpers, he's shooting about 41%, which is actually, this is according to Mike Romalo from the Las Vegas Sun, is ninth among Mountain West Conference players. A former walk-on who, at the beginning of this season, didn't have a ton of confidence in his offense.
Well, he's shooting the right ones. And in that game, UNLV shoots 44% from three, and it wasn't because they're shooting great. They're shooting the right ones. Sometimes your percentage is down. You're just shooting the wrong threes. You know, are you a good shooter? Or are you a bad shooter because you shoot the good, bad threes? I mean, that's the thing. What threes are you taking? And I thought in that game, they took good threes. And I was impressed by that. And they were 7-for-16, 44%. And I really thought, you know, and to see Elijah go 3-for-5, he goes 4-for-4. You know, together they were 7-for-9. That's shooting the ball, and that's shooting the right ones.
I wonder what San Diego State does against them in terms of what they try on offense this second go-around.
Well, I think they're going to take it right at him.
But if UNLV is going to go small, wouldn't you expect Matt Mitchell to be inside a little bit more?
I mean, I think so. I think they're going to, you know, post guys
and
up.
And Wetzel. I thought that was one of the things that was sort of overlooked in the first meeting, which turned out to be a pretty close game, even though San Diego State stretched it out with about 6 minutes left. Yanni Wetzel missed a bunch of inside shots. I would think if the Rebels are going to go small and have Mbaké off the floor for, you know, whatever it is, 22 of the 40 minutes, that they're going to be using Wetzel as more of a post-up player than a stretch guy.
I mean, I think that's what they got to think about in their scouting and their preparation is what they're going to do. And I think that's like tomorrow, even with Colorado State. I mean, what's Carvaco? Are they going to put him in the post? If obviously,
he'll be in the post. That's why, you know, it's interesting. Team to team in the Mountain West Conference, it's clear certain team, like Utah State, does not match up well defensively against San Diego State because they're not fleet of foot, and they can get killed by, you know, Flynn and Fagan getting downhill. I don't think UNLV matches up very well against Utah State or Colorado State because they have true fives and you know, strong big fours. But I think UNLV, and who knows, maybe they could lose by 25 next week at Viejas on Saturday, but I actually think UNLV matches up pretty decently with San Diego State.
You've been saying that for a long time, and I just don't see it. I don't see where
they match up better with San Diego State than they do against Utah State and Colorado State.
And you're saying because they got a true big man that sits in the post. So basically, you're saying they can't guard in the post. So maybe there needs to be a change there. Like maybe Mbaké's playing behind too much and he gets caught up and they get good position.
So he's got a front.
Maybe
they
need to front him. Maybe you need to front him. Maybe that would help. Maybe you need to double team instead of double team from the weak side and leaving the weak side of the basket. Maybe double team from the passer, or maybe double team from the top guy on the weak side, and just change up your scheme defensively to get the ball out of those big guys' hands. If they're really hurting you that much, you got to get the ball out of their hands. So I'm sure TJ and them will come up with a plan to go against those guys and to see what they can do if they go ahead and throw it in the post.
I want to turn to what happened over the weekend. Well, last like 4 or 5 days. It's nothing serious. I sound like it's like a real serious tone. John Gruden's been all over the place. Before we get to what Gruden was doing, what would you tell coaches who have a chance to work in Vegas about Vegas? In terms of the entertainment options, because I know You got you. You love shows. I know Marvin Menzies loved shows. But you guys love Vegas.
No question.
How many shows you've been to now?
Over 90.
Yeah.
Over 90. I've seen them all. And it's a great thing. And I would tell coaches in Vegas, or I'll tell anybody in Vegas, you got to be smart and you got to have some type of discipline. I mean, because there's so many temptations here, no matter what, and there's a lot going on, and there's always something to do. If somebody says to you there's nothing to do in Vegas, they're crazy.
God.
There's so many things to do, and it doesn't matter. There's just those so many options. But when you're a coach and you're a celebrity and everybody knows who you are.
You're juiced in like Joe Esposito. My God.
I don't know if I'm juiced in. I wish I was.
The world is your oyster.
But John Gruden, he's going to love Vegas.
I mean, he does already. Listen to this bite from over the weekend. Frank Caliendo, the comedian who does a great John Gruden, and he's doing Gruden in this clip, but they're at an Aerosmith concert. Actually, as you're watching the video, you don't know who they is because you just see Caliendo. Fire it.
All right, man. Going to see some Aerosmith tonight. You ready?
Rock and roll, man.
Yeah, he's got a little video selfie. He's, you know, he says his first couple of lines there. He turns to the camera, and Gruden's sitting there. Rock and roll, man. And they're watching Aerosmith. Gruden has been to see out to see Aerosmith. He was at the VGK game last week, and
With his twin brother?
The meet and greet with Mark Davis. The meet and greet line was like hundreds long. He went to UFC 246 a couple of weeks ago. I think like less than a month ago, he went to see Carrot Top. This guy's living it up. Gruden loves Vegas.
He does love Vegas. And you know what he's going to love even more about Vegas? I can remember when they talked about Derek Carr. Derek Carr is going to be his neighbor. And if you remember, Derek Carr came out and said, well, you know, I don't know if I can carpool with him because he goes to the office at 3 in the morning. And you think about that, and all of a sudden I'm thinking, oh, my God, Gruden's going to love Vegas because he can get a taco at 3 in the morning. He can get anything he wants at 3 in the morning. Everything's open.
He's also going to have, like, a 7-minute ride because I think they're living right up
right
there
in Henderson.
In Seven Hills or Anthem, and it's right down the hill. So there's no Northern California, you know, stupid driving, even at that time. There's people on the road in California.
And he's a late guy in the office. He's an early guy to rise. And Vegas gives you that option. In Vegas, a 24-hour city. He has all those options. And he's making $10 million a year. $10 million a year in Las Vegas. He's going to have and do you remember?
No income tax.
That saves you money right there.
Yeah.
And when he toured the stadium, he kept saying, I can't get over this. I mean, he's sitting there just – he looked like a little kid in a candy store. Or he looks at me at Pizza Rock looking at these pizzas going by. My eyes keep opening up.
You realize what they were working with before, though.
Well, I do.
I mean, the Coliseum.
I do.
I'm not saying our stadium's not impressive, but it's like in relation – I mean, you walk into a new stadium, you must be like, holy crap. It doesn't smell like raw sewage. It's not flooding. This is beautiful.
It is beautiful. And when he saw all the black – he was impressed, and he said, made the comment, you know, I love the black. It's jaw-dropping. I mean, it was like he was like a little kid. He was so excited. So I think he's going to love Vegas. I think Vegas is going to love him. And I just hope he doesn't get – where is he going to get his haircuts? That's what I want to know. You know, that picture of him and Mark Davis. I mean, seriously. I mean, where is he going to get his haircuts? I mean, I go to Sports Clips. I don't know where he's going to go. Where do you get your haircut?
Where do I go?
Yeah, where do you get your haircut?
I bounce around.
You bounce around.
Yeah, I bounce around. But I'm along the same lines. I'm a $13 haircut guy. I don't have that much left.
Well, you got plenty of hair left.
You can't really. I got the bald spot in the back. They can't really screw that up.
They got spray paint for that.
I know.
You can just spray it on. You wear a hat. You'll be fine. And no one's looking at your back anyway. You're walking towards people.
It's a nightmare. My girlfriend about 6 years ago got me the shaky hair.
Like, oh, yeah. Like, you shake it on there.
It's like a pepper shaker.
How'd that work?
That didn't work.
Didn't work.
No, because, you know, I'm a sweaty guy, so all of a sudden you got, like, brown streaks down the back of your head.
I think that's the one thing my wife likes about – probably one of the only things my wife likes about me. I have hair.
Yeah.
I've got hair. 54 years old, I got hair.
Still got it.
I still got some hair.
Actually, I'm way ahead of the entire family. My dad was bald as hell at, like, 33, and my older and younger brother, bald, so got a little bit left.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
I'm jealous of Mark Davis.
He's got hair. Well, he's got hair, but
he's blonde dude. He's in his 50s, and he still has lots of hair.
Well, that's good. I mean, Tom Brady's got hair, too. I wonder where he'll get his haircut.
Wait a second. Well, we'll get to a little Brady in the 5 o'clock hour because there's more discussion. There was an interesting source over the weekend saying Brady will get an offer of $30 million a year from the Raiders. We'll get to that. But on the way back, I do want to give you the William Hill number. You can bet the over-under on how many times the Astros are going to be hit by pitch this year.
Join the conversation on Twitter at Cofield & Co.
It's Cofield & Company's Eye on Sports Gambling.
I'm going to kill your bookmaker. I'm going to rip his throat out. I will step on his throat until the man chokes. Let me tell you how. Winners, 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 winners. Free, 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 free.
We've talked a bunch about San Diego State today, trying to be the, fourth unbeaten team. No, that's not right. First since St. Joe's in 04.
Right.
The other note was last 26-0 teams were Gonzaga back a couple of years ago, and then Kentucky, I think it was 14-15. Jay Billis tweeted out, if you haven't watched San Diego State play, do yourself a favor and tune in to see the Aztecs. That group can ball with anyone. They play smart, hard, together, and fearless. Damn, they're good. And, of course, the immediate responses are excited to see them lose to the 8-9. Another guy says, undefeated, and I promise you no one can name their head coach or their starting five. 90% of America probably thinks Steve Fisher is the head coach.
Did I follow?
As a media member, I felt like this broken record was smashed to pieces, especially with Gonzaga. But we continue to do the same thing every year when there's three or four elite mid-majors and people want to crap on them. It's amazing.
It is amazing. And it's sad because they're doing everything the other teams are doing, too. They just play in a different conference.
Well, the funny thing is you just mentioned it a while ago. This team actually has a bunch of transfers, and it's working. Like, Malachi Flynn was a great player in the Pac-12 as well. KJ Fagan, who came over from Santa Clara, was a great player in the West Coast Conference. Yanni Wetzel was an effective player at Vanderbilt. Like, they were also, you know, two of the three were guys who were playing at the Power 5 level. By the way, the odds have been updated. You can bet regular season unbeaten. Technically, it's 18-0. You can bet 18-0 in the Mountain West Conference for San Diego State. I actually did bet it.
You did?
I did. Well, I want to win some of my money back, and I'm going to have to pay for this pizza.
Got it.
Our bet where I said they're going to lose three or four games in the Mountain West Conference. I got it at minus 125. So, basically, you've got to bet $125 to win 100. It's now up to minus 215 to go unbeaten. So a heavier favorite. Makes sense. They just won, you know, the fourth game down the stretch here. They've got three more left. They're minus 215, so $215 to win 100 that San Diego State will finish the Mountain West Conference regular season at 18-0. UNLV next week, then Colorado State at home, and then at Reno. And as you mentioned, it is senior night for the Pack. And the place should be freaking jammed. So
it should be wild, no question.
Be very cool. And defensive matchup, that is one thing I can appreciate about San Diego State, that, you know, we always hear defense travels. For them, it travels year to year. They've rarely had bad seasons. I think it was a couple of years ago where they had a less than stellar first half defensively, and then they picked it up and they were right back to where they normally are, which is a top 40 defensive team in the country. Other storyline today, and we've got a bunch. We'll get to another Tom Brady rumor with the Raiders. We've got a lot more coming. The pablum being spewed by Carlos Correa and especially Rob Manfred. Dusty Baker sent out a plea last week to Rob Manfred. You've got to protect our players from getting plunked by other teams. William Hill locally, Sportsbook, says we don't believe that that's going to work. So they've set an over-under for hit-by-pitches this season with the Astros. They say the Astros over-under is 83.5. They're going to get hit 80, either, you know, over 83.5 or under 83.5. I think it seems low.
I don't know how many times you see that, you know, how many times guys get hit. But I'm going to say that this would never have happened. This would never have gotten to this point if the commissioner would have. Let me ask you something. I don't know this. So does the commissioner have a PR group that looks at his speech?
Doesn't seem like it.
I mean, you kidding me? And then for
that
him,
was a disaster over the weekend.
That was a disaster, and for him to say, if you look at the faces of the Astros players, that's enough punishment.
Yeah.
I mean, they're
ashamed. Well, you know,
Pete
what?
Rose is crying every night.
Yeah, you know what, Rob? They don't seem to be feeling that much shame as they lash out at everybody. We'll get to Manfred in the Big Five. Pizza Rock, third period started. This is your spot for hockey when the Knights are playing home or away. They're right over at the Fortress. 3-0, about 17 minutes left in the game against the Capitals. Happy hour's going down right now. You can get the personal size specialty pizzas for just $7, like the Tony Two Times, the Pesto Paradise, the Cal Italia.
Sounds good.
Personal pizza, one topping's $5. $4 items like the meatballs, the Italian fries. You got $4 on well drinks. 32-ounce PBRs, $4. $2 off every other draft beer. And then you can try any of their great pizzas. I'm a big fan of the New Yorker, the Old Smoky, the Americano. We're going to come back here for the final hour with Coach Joe Esposito, who's sitting in on President's Day as we'll get to the mess that is Rob Manfred.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.